Scriptures. We're going to look at Joshua chapter 4 today. And I actually would like to just take a little bit of time to read that, Joshua chapter 4 for us, and then we're gonna spend some time kind of looking at this story in light of our current season and what God's doing and what we hear him saying right now. And this time together is meant to serve as a bit of an introduction to our summer. We're going to spend some time in a series on stories and just hearing one another's stories, and hopefully today sets it up, sort of gives some explanation as to why we're doing that and what that's about. But let me read this. It's a bit of a longer reading today. We'll read the full of Joshua chapter 4, where it says, "When all the nations had finished passing over the Jordan, the Lord said to Joshua, 'Take 12 men from the people, from each tribe a man, and command them, saying, Take 12 stones from here out of the midst of the Jordan, from the very place where the priest's feet stood firmly, and bring them over with you and lay them down in the place where you lodge tonight.' Then Joshua called the 12 men from the people of Israel, whom he had appointed, a man from each tribe. And Joshua said to them, 'Pass before the ark of the Lord your God into the midst of the Jordan, and take up each of you a stone upon his shoulder, according to the number of the tribes of the people of Israel, that this may be a sign among you. When your children ask in time to come, What do these stones mean? Then you shall say to them that the waters of the Jordan were cut off before the ark of the covenant of the Lord. When it passed over the Jordan, the waters of the Jordan were cut off, and so these stones shall be to the people of Israel a memorial forever.' The people of Israel did just as Joshua commanded, and took up 12 stones out of the midst of the Jordan, according to the number of tribes of the people of Israel, just as the Lord had told Joshua. And they carried them over with them to the place where they lodged, and laid them down there. And Joshua set up 12 stones in the midst of the Jordan, in the place where the feet of the priests bearing the Ark of the Covenant had stood, and they are there to this day. For the priests bearing the Ark stood in the midst of the Jordan until everything was finished that the Lord commanded Joshua to tell the people, according to all that Moses had commanded Joshua. The people passed over in haste, and when all the people had finished passing over, the Ark of the Lord and the priests passed over before the people. The sons of Reuben, the sons of Gad, the sons of the half-tribe of Manasseh passed over armed before the people of Israel, as Moses had told them. About 40,000, ready for war, passed over before the Lord for battle to the plains of Jericho. And on that day the Lord exalted Joshua in the sight of all Israel. And they stood in awe of him, just as they had stood in awe of Moses all the days of his life. The Lord said to Joshua, 'Command the priests bearing the ark of the testimony to come up from the Jordan.' So Joshua commanded the priests, 'Come up out of the Jordan.' And when the priests bearing the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord came up from the midst of the Jordan, the soles of the priests' feet were lifted up on dry ground. The waters of the Jordan returned to their place and overflowed all its banks as before. The people came up out of the Jordan on the 10th day of the first month, and they encamped at Gilgal on the east border of Jericho. And those 12 stones which they took out of the Jordan, Joshua set up at Gilgal. And he said to the people of Israel, 'When your children ask their fathers in times to come, What do these stones mean? Then you shall let your children know, Israel passed over this Jordan on dry ground. For the Lord your God dried up the waters of the Jordan for you until you passed over, as the Lord your God did with the Red Sea, which he dried up for us until we'd passed over, so that all the people of the earth may know that the hand of the Lord is mighty, and that you may fear the Lord your God forever.'" The word of the Lord. When your children ask, then you will tell them. This is such a beautiful heart of God. We talked about last week the next generation, and I just want to stay there. What our call is in place of our inheritance and what God's given to us in the gospel. And this responsibility, we have to pass it on to the next generation. We see it here in the heart of God again. And this isn't the first time. You can go back in the history of Israel and see this same heart in God for his people in many different places. But here specifically, I want to look at this story for our purposes today and just see. I love how God says to Joshua, "Why would you do this?" And he connects it right back to his children. So that when your children ask, "What are these stones about?" you can tell them. In that sense, just imagine that for a minute. I was thinking about it this week as I was reading and kind of preparing, and just kind of thinking of a child coming to a father. You know, here we are on this Father's Day, and I've, you know, a lot of our kids are very much like I was. They ask a ton of questions, and a lot of them seem almost silly, you know, but they just want to know about everything. Earl and Candace are here today with us, and it's so great to have them visiting. And when we showed up, their son just met me, never met me before in his life, and he met me at the door with questions. It was just like, what's that? And why is this? And why are we doing this? And, you know, that's kids, right? And there's this part of our hearts that I think instinctually we want to make sense of life. We want to make sense of the world. We want to make sense of what it is that we are doing and why we're here and what we're supposed to be, you know, how we're supposed to be relating to this life. And I can imagine the people of God in the promised land years later, and, you know, a father and son maybe are on a journey and they come past this memorial, and the father stops and he recognizes, because he knows what it is, and he stops and he takes these stones in, and there's no way the son doesn't say, why are we stopping? Like, what is this? It looks like a pile of rocks, you know? When your children ask, you shall tell them, God says. And so there's this kind of thought, you know, it's a child, daddy, what are those? Like, what is this? And the father kind of looks at the son and says, oh, that's a really great story, actually. A really good story. Come here for a minute. You know the story of Abraham, Father Abraham, and how he went, and then Moses, and how he went, and then you've heard the story of the Red Sea before. Here in this spot was a story very much like the Red Sea. When the people, our people, your grandfathers, got to Canaan, your uncle Caleb and I, if you see, imagine it was Joshua maybe speaking to his son, your father, your uncle Caleb and I were sent with 10 other people to spy out this land. We got this far after we'd crossed the Red Sea. And we went out and we spied the land. And we wanted to go in, Caleb and I. Your uncle and I, we said, let's do this. God's got it. But the other 10 said, no, it's impossible. It just can't be done. There's too much, too many giants in the land. And we're going to get beat down. Like, if we go in there, that'll be the end of us. And no matter how hard your uncle Caleb and I fought for it, they wouldn't let us go. And so the Lord actually, in response to that, had us wander around in the wilderness on the other side of this river for 40 years. So for 40 years, we wandered around in this, you can see across there, and we didn't know where we were, and the Lord provided for us. It was amazing, but it was kind of sad because, you know, Caleb and I just kept looking at each other saying, we could have gone, you know. But the Lord was faithful, and after that 40 years, we came back to this spot. Moses had died, and they asked me to lead. And God told me that when you go, I want you to get the priests and the Ark of the Covenant that's in the tabernacle, and I want you to send them first into that river. And so you can imagine this father explaining this to his son, looking at this river, and the son seeing this river and just putting together in his head, like, what? Yeah. Like, it was like this. And we came to the edge of this river, and God told us, send the priests and the ark into the river. And then I'll quote right here from Joshua, or chapter 3, right before what we read. As soon as those bearing the ark had come as far as the Jordan, and the feet of the priests bearing the ark were dipped into the brink of the water. Now remember, the Jordan overflows its banks at the time of the harvest. The waters coming down from above stood and rose up in a heap very far away. At Adam, the city is beside Zarethan. And those flowing down towards the Sea of Araba, the Salt Sea, were completely cut off. And the people passed over opposite Jericho. Now the priests bearing the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord stood firmly on dry ground until all the nation finished passing over the Jordan. And when we saw this happen, we knew, all of us, you could hear it, looking at each other, over and over, God is with us. And everyone was talking about Moses and how God had done this at the Red Sea. And look, he's doing it again. And we talked about the Egyptian enslavement and how God had set us free from it. And we celebrated together. We remembered the promises of God to our father Abraham and how that day God was fulfilling his promises to us. And these stones that you see here were actually taken up from underneath that water, from the bed of that river when it was dry. There's 12 of them because every one of the tribes sent a man to grab one. And we remembered that God had, what he'd done it for us all. He did it for us as a people, as a tribe. And they were set here so that on days like today, you could ask me, how did we get here? What are these stones about? Well, the fact is, they're standing here to tell us that we have a God. That he loves us. That he's faithful to his promises. That he's mighty to save. And that we are his people. The first thing we did when we got over here and we had set these rocks up was we worshiped. We celebrated the Passover together. We did the things that the people of God do. Passover. And you can see the little kid's mind. What's that? Well, that's a story for another day. The Passover was the same way for the people of God. It was the same instructions given to them that they would do that. And part of the reason was so their children would know the story of the Passover. And not just the story of the Passover, but the God of the Passover. Life is, John Eldredge said in a book that titled Epic, incredible read, that life is a story. A far more like a story than it is like a math problem. That life is far more complex. It has the ins and outs, the plots, the twists, the turns, the adventures, the joys, the tragedies, the story. It doesn't sort of have the simple, clear-cut, you know, nature of a math problem. But often we want to try and understand it or figure it out like it's a math problem when it isn't. And we just get ourselves into all kinds of trouble. And I think kids get this better than adults. Kids still seem to have this sense of mystery. The sense of story. They recognize that life is curious. And that's why they ask questions that most of us wouldn't even think to ask, like, do worms yawn? And where does the sun go when it slips behind that mountain? And stories are marked by big questions. And it's the work of a good author, the writer of a story, or a good narrator, the teller of a story, to connect us with these questions and to lead us towards the answers to them. That a good story actually creates or connects us with the deeper questions of our own life, but also by its telling and by its remembering, lead us into the answers. Help us find those questions not only in the question form, but find the answers to them. Who is God? Who am I? Why are we here? What's possible? How do I make sense of this life? Its joys, its challenges, its purposes, etc. How are we to relate to one another? How are we to relate to the world around us, to our neighbor? How are we to relate to creation? Big questions that quickly come up when we begin to consider not just any story, but the story of our lives. And here in the Old Testament as a whole, but certainly here in this moment with Joshua, part of what God's doing is he's putting himself forward as the author of the story. That he wants the story told, but he wants it told in a way, and it's very clear from the text, that the takeaway is about who he is, that he's present to us, that he's with us, that he's moving. God is an author, and he's the author of your story. He's the author of all stories. The creator, when the earth was formless and void, without shape, when there was chaos, the Lord spoke. And he begins to author a story in creation. And he does the same thing for each of us when we're born, when we're knit together in our mother's wombs. God begins to author a story that is my story, that is your story. And your story is actually being authored by the author of a much larger story. And so it's not separate from that story. That your story, in fact, only makes sense in light of and connected with the larger story that the author is writing. That you are, in some sense, as a character in his story. That you are a part of it. An important part of it. A unique part of it. But only a part of it. Your story is actually being written into a larger story, the gospel story. The story of creation, of redemption, of salvation and reconciliation. And we must learn this story, this bigger story, if we're ever to properly understand our own. And I think it's why a lot of us and a lot of people in their lives, we get to different points. You know, maybe there's big ones around 8 or 9. And then there's some big ones again around 13, 14. And some big ones again as we move from college into adulthood. And then there's, you know, the whole midlife crisis moment for a lot of people. These moments when we start to ask those questions in kind of a louder way, they hit us. We need answers to them. I need to understand who I am, why I'm here. And the world around us is asking those questions, and the world around us is trying to answer those questions. But most of us have experienced the fact that when we try and answer those questions, apart from the larger story, the answers come out funny. That we find ourselves confused more about who we are, who God is, what we're doing, what's the purpose of my life, the meaning of it, how am I to live? That these kind of, we get actually further and further from the answers when we get further and further from the larger story, because we can't just sort of fill in our story and think we've got it figured out. The reality of it is it has to be connected to that bigger story. This larger story that God is writing is incredibly important. It's foundational. It's essential to us for a number of reasons. I'll give you three that stood out to me. First of all, I think that this larger story is important because it connects us. It connects us with the author. When we stand on the banks of the Jordan River and we see those memorial stones and we hear the story of the people of Israel, it doesn't just, you know, sort of connect the people with their Jewishness. It first and foremost connects them with their Creator. It tells us things about Him, that He's present, that He has a plan, that He's faithful to that plan. That our lives are somehow part of a bigger story, and that we didn't sort of arrive at the beginning of the story. We came into it midway. And so it connects us with the author, but it does also, in a beautiful way, connect us with each other. We're all part of the same story. That God's not writing a whole bunch of detached stories, even across nationalities or economic status or gender. God's writing one story, and we're all in that same story together. And so it's important for us to understand the larger story because it connects us with the author, but it also helps us connect with each other in a right, healthy way, the way that God intended, right? So even as we pray for our Indigenous people today, and as Canadians, we pray that in a time when in the world lots of questions about race are being asked. Lots of people are thinking about these sorts of things. This larger story is essential to us finding our right place in that conversation. That we're not having that conversation detached from the larger story. So some bishops wrote a letter after the things that happened in the States a couple of weeks ago. And one of the beautiful things that they pointed out, Bishop Stewart and a couple of others, is that we are made in the image of God. They point back to the bigger story, that we all are the Imago Dei, made in the image of God, regardless of your race. And so this larger story begins to inform, why does the Christian stand up for these things? We know why lots of people stand up. But the reason that the Christian stands up for things, and I think the reason why it resonates in the hearts of all humanity, is because we're part of a bigger story. We know that somehow there's a solidarity here between me and another, and that something like race doesn't change that. So stories are important because they inform us, they connect us with God, and they connect us with each other. The second reason why I think this larger story is so important is because it connects us and it anchors us. Remembrance, remembering the story, telling the story, reliving the story, coming back into, and so encountering memorial stones and remembering why they're there, stopping for a moment to remember, brings the larger story into our present. And so it anchors us in this way, that when we hit trouble or when we feel lost, the larger story actually anchors us, because we're not just floating on the wind. We're not just sort of at whims, even on days when we have no idea what's going on or where we're going. We actually can be anchored, confident, as we remember the story. because it tells us things about God and his faithfulness and who he is and his commitment to us and his presence with us. And I mean, stories like this Jordan River story are one of those stories, right? But it anchors us also in this, that it gives purpose to our lives. It actually answers the larger story, begins to answer the bigger questions of who am I? Why am I here? How am I to relate to the world and understand it? These things that without the larger story can be places of real confusion for us and real frustration for us. And so this larger story is important because it anchors us. It gives us a space to find our story. It connects us and it anchors us. And finally, the story is important because it propels us. It speaks into our future. It's a story and it's a good one, and any good story has a great ending, right? Even in the middle of it, you know it's headed somewhere. The Lord of the Rings series, epic tale, right? And when you're sitting in the throes of Mordor with Frodo and Sam and the whole thing is just about to come to an end, you don't stop reading. You got to get to the end, right? And in the hardest times and in the most unearthed moments of the story, you're most tempted to flip to the back and see how this ends, right? I got to see how this story ends. And in that sense, this great story that God is writing, he's actually already given us the end. He's already signaled how the story ends. And so this larger story is important for us because it speaks in any given moment to where we're headed. It gives us a clear sense of where we're going. And the story as a whole speaks into our confidence in that hope. And so the story births hope in us. When your children ask, then you shall tell them. And so we're going to spend the summer together sharing our stories. I've asked members of our community over a number of our Sundays. We're going to have a few Sundays where we do some prayer walks and things. But when we're together like this, we're just going to have someone each week share their story. And how they have seen that story connect with, find its place in the bigger story. Right? Because we've all got stories. I mean, if you get Mike and I together on a couch, you could hear it. We just trade off story after story, right? And that's a lot of fun. But those stories will come into play. But what I've asked people to do is to really be able to take what are those moments, those memorial stone moments? The ones where you picked up the rocks from the dry bed of a river and set them up and they changed your life. They set the course in some ways. The places you come back to where your story and all these crazy things that happen in life and we walk it through found their place in the larger story. What's the God story? And we're going to share these stories because it's important for us to hear them. I think it's just going to be awesome to just hear each other's stories and to be encouraged by that. But also because I want us to learn and to each of us, whether you are one who takes the opportunity to share your story this summer or not, I would like you to be ready to do it. So whether you actually are on deck or not, I think each of us need to be able to and ready to share our story. For example, when our children come to church and they see the Lord's table being set and they ask us, what is that? Why do we do this? We should be ready to tell that story. When they ask us, what is baptism? Were you baptized? We should be ready to tell that story. When one of the Maynard girls sees a picture of a burn back in the day, and they ask Alec, what is that? That Alec wouldn't just answer, oh, that was something we did a long time ago, but would be ready and able to share from that the story of God, the God story of their lives. When a friend comments on how Jeff and Maria are so committed to their faith and how that faith seems to impact their decisions and their walking with God in profound ways, that they would be ready and able to share the story of God that brought that faith about, that birthed that faith in them. as friends ask Jesse, as they supposedly are over and over again right now, why are you so excited about church? Why do you talk about your church all the time? Did she not just take the opportunity to tell the story of her church, but the God story that her church is a part of and has led her into? When someone asks Jana or I how we met or when we got married, that we would see the opportunity it is to tell the God story that brought us together, that has sustained us over and over again. John Eldridge said, Christianity in its true form tells us that there is an author and that he is good. The essence of all that is good and beautiful and true. For he is the source of all these things. It tells us that he has set our hearts' longings within us. And he has made us to live in an epic. It warns us that the truth is always in danger of being twisted and corrupted, stolen from us, because there's a villain in the story who hates our hearts and wants to destroy us. It calls us up into a story that is truer and deeper than any other, and assures us that there we will find the meaning of our lives. What if? What if all the great stories that have ever moved you or brought you to tears, what if they're telling you something about the true story into which you were born? The epic, not which you that has been cast. We won't begin to understand our lives or what this so-called gospel is that Christianity speaks of until we understand the story in which we've found ourselves. For when you were born into an epic that has already been underway for quite some time. It's a story of beauty and intimacy and adventure, a story of danger and loss and heroism and betrayal. It is a work of magic, of deep darkness and flickering starlight. It is a world where goodness is pitted against evil, love against hate, order against chaos. In a great struggle where often it is hard to be sure who belongs to which side because appearances are endlessly deceptive. Yet for all its confusion and wildness, it's a world where the battle goes ultimately to the good, who live happily ever after, and where in the long run everybody, good and evil alike, becomes known by his true name. That is the fairy tale of the gospel, with of course one crucial difference from all other fairy tales, which is that the claims made for it is that it is true. That I not only happened once upon a time, but that it's kept on happening ever since and is happening still. Together as a church, we're going to share our stories this summer. And I encourage you to do that in our formal times together like this, but find spaces even as families to share your story. Find opportunities with your friends and with your neighbors to share your story. Because the story is essential. The world around us is needing to hear how our lives have found their place in the larger story. They're needing to hear that larger story. And one of the greatest ways that they're going to hear it and that we get to tell it is to tell our individual stories and how they found their place in that story, just like Joshua did with the stones. Where you can tell of this moment where a certain group of people in a certain generation watched their story weaved into the larger story. And that somehow in God's mind would breathe life into and give direction to the stories of their children as they sought to do the same. So even here as we come to the Lord's table today, let's take a moment and quiet our hearts. Let's take a moment and posture our hearts before the story. That every week when we come to the Lord's table, we remember his death until he comes again. We remember the power of resurrection. We remember the larger story. And we very sacramentally, we physically bring our lives into that story as we participate in it by partaking bread and wine, preparing our hearts and living into that story. And so even maybe today as we come to the Lord's table, you would start as we head into this summer together to consider your own story, to just think for a moment about how it weaves in to the larger story. Think about how you came to faith. Think about how your story was led into the waters of baptism. Think about the different moments when the Lord parted rivers for you to make a way where there didn't seem to be a way. Our children need to hear these stories, but our hearts need to hear these stories.